regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. You know, one of the things about doing this program in the middle of the day, or at least earlier in the day, is that sometimes as the show is being uploaded or shortly after the show gets uploaded, we get some breaking news that I really would have liked to have talked about. So we had Costas Morris on the program yesterday talking about the public comments that Second Amendment Foundation submitted, mostly in support of the proposed rule changes that the ATF has announced. One of the proposed rules, SAF had a problem with. I think there was another one where they wanted to see some clarification. Anyway, shortly after we get wrapped up talking with Costas, we get this decision from district court, federal district court in North Texas. Pretty big decision, actually, on two consolidated cases, Jensen and Silencer Shop. Both of these lawsuits challenges to essentially the registration requirements for suppressors, for short-barreled firearms. Because the transfer taxes have been zeroed out under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and the registration requirement for the NFA is actually a registry of who has paid that tax. So a number of Second Amendment organizations, as well as businesses and individual gun owners, sued, arguing that these provisions are now unconstitutional. They also argued that these provisions were unconstitutional to begin with under the Second Amendment. The judge in this case did not reach the Second Amendment argument, said that he didn't need to reach the Second Amendment argument, which, you know, and it is what it is, but said that, yes, the plaintiffs are correct that without this $200 transfer tax in place, then Congress has no authority to impose a registration requirement on these items. U.S. District Judge James Wesley Hendricks said, by zeroing out the transfer and making taxes for most NFA items, the transfer and making taxes for most NFA firearms, Congress eliminated the constitutional basis for the regulations that formerly supported the taxes for those firearms. No longer can the challenged NFA provisions be justified, as they have been for nearly 90 years, under Congress's taxing power. And because Congress enacted the challenged NFA provisions under the taxing clause only, the NFA cannot be retroactively justified under another power that Congress never invoked, such as its authority to regulate interstate commerce. Thus, the challenged NFA provisions exceed Congress's enumerated powers. The DOJ had sought to defend the registration requirements, basically by making a Commerce Clause argument. And Judge Hendricks said, well, no, you can't do that, because that wasn't the argument that Congress made when it imposed these requirements. So you can't go back and try to say that, well, actually, they didn't need to cite their taxing authority. There was a sort of implied Commerce Clause argument. Now, Judge Hendricks did limit the injunction that he granted to the organizational plaintiffs, their members, and the customers of these businesses that sue. Not just current members and customers, but future members and customers as well. And that's important to note, that this did not just include the organizational plaintiffs, but the customers for businesses like Silencer Shop. So I don't know. We haven't seen the actual order come down from the judge. In fact, we're not going to see that order for at least another week. He's giving the government a chance to appeal. Assuming for a second that the DOJ does not appeal. And we'll get into how likely or not that is in a second. The judge would then enter a formal injunction, right? It would write out the order, lay out the terms of this injunction. I would love for this injunction to be as broad as the judge stated. And by the way, the judge said, can't do a universal injunction. The Supreme Court has said that the federal courts lack the power to issue universal injunctions that provide relief to parties that are not before the court, citing Trump versus CASA. So, you know, if you've complained before about why do we get these silly rulings where, yes, the law is unconstitutional and it can't be enforced against Bob because Bob's the only person who sued. That's why. Because the Supreme Court has essentially foreclosed universal injunctions. They can strike down a law, but a district court judge cannot say this law cannot be applied to anybody across the United States. We've seen in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals where this district judge is located. Other injunctions that have been limited to the organizational plaintiffs within the Fifth Circuit's jurisdiction. So I don't know, and I don't think we will know, at least until the judge's order comes out, whether this will apply to organizational plaintiffs and their members, the businesses and their customers, only within this district in Northern Texas, within perhaps the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals jurisdiction, or throughout the entirety of the United States. And that's important. And again, that is assuming that the DOJ does not appeal the judge's decision. Will the DOJ appeal the judge's decision? I certainly hope not. You know, going back to the debate over the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and the scope of the NFA relief that was going to be included in that act. You know, we talked with Representative Andrew Clyde language was making its way from the House to the Senate. And he said that the intent of Congress was to not just zero out the tax, but to zero out the registry. Because again, if the registry is essentially a registry of who's paid this tax and there is no tax to be paid, how can you even have a registration requirement? The Senate parliamentarian, though, said, no. The taxing, well, I mean, that clearly falls under, you know, budget issues, right? But the registration, that does not. So she forced Republicans to strip out the language that would have gotten rid of the registration requirement as well. But that was clearly Congress's intent, right? And I sure hope that that matters to the DOJ. That, again, by not appealing this decision, by allowing it to stand, that they would, in fact, be going along with the intent of Congress in passing the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Of course, you know, DOJ didn't have to defend the registration requirement to begin with, but they did. And my guess is that the DOJ, more likely than not, will appeal this decision to the Fifth Circuit. I'd say 60-40, 70-30. I think there's a real chance that they don't. But I think it is more likely at this point that they will continue the defense of the registration requirement. And note again, this is not going to be the Civil Rights Division. That would be defending the NFA. It hasn't been the Civil Rights Division, so this isn't Harmeet Dillon. This is an entirely different department under the DOJ. Again, I'd love it if Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, sent down the orders to the U.S. Attorney and the Civil Division saying, no, we're not going to appeal this decision. We're going to let it stand. I just don't know that we're going to see that. The other thing that I did want to talk about was the gun control reaction and a little bit of the media reaction to yesterday's news. The New York Times reporting federal judge weakens key gun control law. The National Firearms Act mandated a permitting process for short-barreled rifles and shotguns as well as suppressors. A judge ruled that the provision was unconstitutional. Yeah, by the way, the judge did not rule that the NFA was unconstitutional. I did see that claim being floated by some folks on our side. And that's not the case. The NFA wasn't ruled entirely unconstitutional. It was, again, specifically the requirements for NFA item owners that were imposed as a result of the transfer and makings tax. And with those taxes now zeroed out, the regulations associated with those taxes cannot be enforced for those items, right? And obviously, you know, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act didn't touch the NFA as it applies to machine guns, for instance. So those provisions still in full effect, regardless of the judge's decision. The New York Times piece actually wasn't terrible. I have to say, I kind of expected it to be awful, and maybe we'll see something in the opinion pages that is terrible. But it played the issue pretty straight. Did talk to a number of gun control groups who did not respond well to the decision. Gun control groups that opposed the lawsuit in court criticized the ruling, asserting that the judge's order had effectively deregulated some of the most dangerous guns and accessories. Adam Skaggs, chief counsel at the Giver's Law Center, said that, quote, for nearly 100 years, Congress has required background checks, registration, and oversight before somebody could buy a silencer, short-barreled rifle, or short-barreled shotgun. He added that removing those requirements came, quote, at the expense of the safety of every American. Well, again, for nearly 100 years, Congress did require that. And then, under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, Congress did not require that. They zeroed out the taxes on those items. And again, we don't want to give, I don't care if you're a gun control advocate, gun control supporter, I don't care where you stand. We don't want to give Congress power that the Constitution doesn't grant it. That's bad. I don't care what issue we're talking about. So from that perspective, obviously, from a Second Amendment perspective, I think this is a great decision. But from that perspective, the perspective of limited government, the perspective of, you know, these branches have to color within the lines of authority that were granted to it under the Constitution, this is a good decision. We don't want the government to come up with these ad hoc arguments. We don't want the government to say, well, even though this was the reason why we imposed a law 90 years ago, this entirely unrelated reason means that we can keep enforcing the law today. I would also note that this does not remove background checks or oversight before somebody buys a suppressor or a short-barreled firearm. It gets rid of the registration requirements. Again, for the organizational members, the plaintiffs in these organizations that filed suit, and the customers in the businesses that filed suit, you're still going to have to go through a background check to purchase a suppressor. You're still going to have to go through a background check to purchase a short-barreled rifle. That doesn't change. What changes, again, and that's only if this decision actually takes effect. What would change, again, is that registry requirement. Chris Brown, president of the Brady campaign, said in a statement that a majority of Americans were not asking for the law to be gutted. Instead, she said, an extreme, outspoken few in government were working on behalf of corporate profits when they should be upholding their fundamental duty to public safety. Yeah, so what's happened to violent crime since the One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed? Has it gone up? Mm-mm. Has it gone down? Mm-hmm. By a lot? Mm-hmm. Yeah. One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed last year, right? Took effect in January. And so far, according to the Crime Index, homicides dropped about 18% last year, which is enormous. I believe the biggest one-year decline in homicides that's been recorded since the FBI started keeping track. The Crime Index reports that through May of this year, there's been another 18% decline in homicides. Violent crime down, I believe, close to 6% nationwide. So removing the taxes on these items didn't cause crime to go up, even though it certainly caused sales of these items to go up. According to NSSF, their latest numbers came out for July, and the number of background checks performed as part of NFA transfers was, I believe the total was 108% higher than July of 2025. I know it was more than 100% higher, right? More than double the sales in July of last year. And that's been the case since the One Big Beautiful Bill Act took effect. We have seen many, many more NFA items sold than we did the year before. But contrary to Chris Brown's claim, we have not seen violent crime skyrocket as a result. We haven't even seen violent crime increase after the One Big Beautiful Bill Act took effect. Now, as we were saying about, a majority of Americans were not asking for the law to be gutted. So what? So what? That's not how lawsuits work, right? You could go back to the 1950s. Majority of Americans were not asking for schools to be integrated. Supreme Court said segregated schools violate the Constitution. 1970s. Majority of Americans were not asking that abortion be recognized under the Constitution. Supreme Court said there's an implied right. You know, we've had, I would argue that the number of judicial decisions that majority of Americans were not asking for probably outnumber the Supreme Court decisions where majority of Americans were asking for something to happen. Again, that makes no difference. I don't think most Americans have an opinion on the National Firearms Act. I'm guessing most Americans who don't own firearms may not even know that the National Firearms Act exists, right? So whether or not they were asking for the law to be gutted is irrelevant. The question again is, does Congress have the power, have the authority under the Constitution, under its taxing power? Because again, that was the argument as to why these registration requirements were put in place. So with a tax zeroed out, does Congress still have the authority to impose a registration requirement on these items? That's the simple question. And, you know, honestly, I mean, the answer is pretty common sense, right? No. If there's no tax, then how could Congress have the power to continue requiring people to register the firearms, or at least register the tax that has been paid when the tax has been zeroed out? It makes no sense. But then again, does the gun control lobby ever make sense? She went on to say, nearly 100 years ago, following the horror of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and a wave of gangland Tommy gun shootouts, our country, with the support of even the NRA, banded together to draw a clear line and regulate these tools of war. Now, and so, again, we see the intentional misstating of what this decision does. This decision doesn't touch machine guns, right? What does Chris Brown bring up? Machine guns. Tools of war, she called them. I mean, if that's the case, I think there's a Second Amendment argument that those arms would be protected, right? The Supreme Court has said arms that are most useful in a militia service would be those arms that are protected, right? But also, if these firearms are nothing more than tools of war, then millions of Americans are misusing them. Because you've got millions of Americans who lawfully own suppressors. You've got millions of Americans who lawfully own short-barreled firearms. They're not out there waging war. They're not out there committing violent crimes. These items are rarely used in violent crimes. Far more likely to be used for lawful purposes. But again, the gun control lobby, they just can't handle it. New York Times concluded its piece, and I thought this was interesting, noting suppressors, sometimes called silencers. First of all, like, the media's always called them silencers, so I think it's great that they're actually calling them suppressors now. Were once a niche accessory for civilian gun owners associated with Hollywood hitmen, but rarely seen in general use or real-life murders. Their popularity has skyrocketed in recent years as more gun owners use them to prevent brain injuries and hearing damage. There are millions in circulation. A private citizen who was credited with saving lives after shooting back at a gunman in Ohio last week was armed with a pistol fitted with a suppressor. And by the way, that link that the New York Times shared in the statement about using them to prevent brain injuries, that was actually a link back to another New York Times piece that ran earlier this year. And it looked at research that found suppressors reduce the concussive effects of gunfire, particularly on indoor ranges. And yes, your brain doesn't rattle around as much in your head when you're using a suppressed firearm shooting at an indoor range, which, again, is another benefit, right? Not just to the hearing, but to your brain pan as well. I know that this isn't the format for Straight News, but I really would have loved to have seen another paragraph of Chris Brown responding to the New York Times saying, hey, you know what? Millions of people own these guns. They're not really using a lot of crime. They're beneficial for hearing. They're beneficial for, you know, your brain. What say you? But I guess they didn't ask that question. They just went with the statement that Chris Brown provided. Anyway, I don't have any complaints with the New York Times coverage of this decision, which is really surprising to me. Obviously, don't have really any complaints with the decision itself. I understand why the judge couldn't grant a universal injunction. I understand why this did not touch machine guns, because that wasn't an issue that was raised by the plaintiffs. And I think that this was a pretty straightforward and common sense decision by the judge. I don't know how the judge could have ruled any other way. Unless, again, the judge was willing to give power to Congress that it does not have under the Constitution. So now we wait and we see what the DOJ does. We've got, 6 days left now, I guess, right, for the DOJ to make its decision. And if the DOJ decides to take the loss, then we'll wait to see the scope of Judge Hendricks's permanent injunction. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Iowa. Here's the headline. Teen who stole $60,000 in armed robbery gets deferred judgment. I mean, $60,000 armed robbery, no punishment. That's what the gist of this is. 19-year-old Mohammed Abukar was charged with first-degree robbery in May of last year. The armed robbery took place after a teen living in a home, I believe in Des Moines, posted photos on social media showing a large amount of cash in the home. So, first of all, that teen's a moron. The cash did not belong to him. The cash belonged to his mom, who I'm sure was not thrilled about having her son flash that cash on social media. But Abukar and several accomplices decided, hey, a lot of money in that house. Let's go take it. So they entered the home with the intention of stealing the money. Abukar knew the teen, threatened the occupants of the home with a firearm. At one point, bit the teenager, causing injuries. The now 19-year-old, which means he would have been 18 at the time, likely, because it was May. So it's possible he was just about to turn 18. But, you know, at most, he was a few months away from his 18th birthday and may have already reached the age of majority. Pleaded guilty in March of this year in a deal that resulted in the armed robbery charge being amended to lesser counts of theft, burglary, and assault. And those are still pretty serious crimes. And Abukar could have been sentenced to prison for those crimes. But instead, last week he appeared for sentencing and received a deferred judgment, meaning that if he follows the court's requirements, not only will he do no time behind bars, but in fact, the conviction or the guilty plea will be wiped away from his record. And it'll be like this never happened at all. He has to do 3 years of probation. He has to pay more than $3,000 in penalties and $60,000 in restitution, which amazed me that money was not apparently recovered. And I don't know how long it's going to take Abukar to pay back $60,000. I'm guessing it's going to be a while. And in a separate case included in the same plea deal, Abukar pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor drug offense, was sentenced to 30 days that he had already served. So there you go. Want to get away with an armed robbery? Apparently just do it as a teenager in Des Moines, Iowa. And you've got a fighting chance at getting away with it. You might have to pay the money back eventually, but you don't have to go to prison for it. Today's armed citizen story. This from Ohio. This from the Dayton Daily News. A woman shoots, kills ex-boyfriend during reported break-in at Harrison Township home. We do have, I think, quite a bit of information, but the investigation is continuing. So I will say that, you know, if they get new information, then maybe this changes. But I think based on what we know now, this would most likely be a case of a justified use of force. This was Wednesday morning. At 2:15 in the morning, Montgomery County Sheriff's deputies responded to a home for a reported burglary in progress in Harrison Township. A woman who lives at the home had called 911, told dispatchers that her ex-boyfriend was trying to break in. She told police that he was kicking in the door and breaking out the windows. Moments later, the woman could be heard screaming at the man, and dispatchers heard the sound of a muffled gunshot. Or at least, you know, a muffled sound of a gunshot. Police say that the woman then told the dispatcher that she had shot her ex-boyfriend, that she was fleeing the residence with her children. She stayed on the phone with 911 dispatchers as deputies were en route. When they got there, they found a 34-year-old inside the home. They provided medical care, but medics pronounced him dead at the scene. Investigators collected a firearm, a shell casing, and a bullet there at the scene. The home's front door was broken. A window screen outside had been pulled off. According to police, the woman and three children, all of them younger than 14, were at home at the time of the shooting. None of them were injured. Police say that there was a physical altercation involving the ex-boyfriend at the home the previous night. So I guess Tuesday evening, or maybe Monday evening, depending on when. The man and woman both left the home. The woman did return later. According to police, the man had been staying at the home off and on, but police don't believe that he had a key to the residence. I don't think he was on, you know, the lease agreement. It wasn't on the mortgage. If there was a that was the situation. The spokesman for the sheriff's office said that at this point they didn't know whether or not there had been previous domestic dispute calls at the residence. He said, though, there is evidence consistent with a recent assault. So also added that the woman's been cooperating with law enforcement. They said once the investigation is over, the Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office will consider presenting the case to a grand jury. So, again, the investigation continues, but based on everything known at this point, the woman has not been arrested. She's not facing charges. And so long as there is not, you know, some evidence that all of a sudden leads investigators in an entirely different direction, I think this is going to be ruled a justifiable use of force. But we'll keep our eyes open for any more details as they become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day an update on a good deed we actually talked about earlier in the week. This woman in Massachusetts who got her clothing caught in an escalator and was basically pinned there. And a Good Samaritan came, hit the emergency stop button, and helped save her life. This was an escalator that 2 months earlier, something similar happened to a gentleman, and he died. Because for 20 minutes, people kept walking around him as he's struggling to break free, and he finally ended up being strangled to death. So we didn't know who this Good Samaritan was when we brought you this story, but the Good Samaritan actually has met this woman that he helped when she was trapped there in that escalator. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Like many of the Good Samaritans we talk about, he didn't really consider himself a hero. Guy Dalen is his name. NBC Boston spoke with him, and he said that the incident with this guy 2 months earlier was very much on his mind. In fact, after this guy had been killed, Dayan said he specifically looked to see where the emergency stop button was in case he was ever in a position where he needed to act in the future. 40-year-old, father of two, who's on his way to work, goes into the T station, sees what's happening. And he says, you know, you can't believe something like this happens in a place you walk every day. He says, you don't want to be the one who's stuck there. You don't want to be the one who goes by and doesn't know how to react. So when he got into the train station and he's starting to go down, he could see somebody pulling at this woman. And he could also see somebody walking up the down escalator trying to get away. So he ran to the bottom, pressed the emergency stop button. He said he could tell that the woman was not seriously hurt. He could see MBTA employees that were responding. And so he said, I just had to catch a train. And he left. He said, I didn't know it was going to be a big news story. It was, you know, there was local news coverage that night. And Dan said that when he got home, he said, my wife told me immediately, you saved her. He said, you don't think about it like that. But yes, she was saved because of that. He says it feels good. So in the right place at the right time. And again, they were able to reunite the woman and Mr. Dayan. And I'm glad to see that. But also glad to see him. I know he didn't want the recognition. Didn't feel like he deserved the recognition. But I'm glad to see him get a little recognition there. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. We'll see what news breaks this afternoon after the this show gets uploaded. But if news does break, you can be sure to find it at BearingArms.com. Today, tomorrow, throughout the weekend, we've got you covered on the latest news impacting your right to keep and bear arms. And if you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. And you can take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll get some great benefits. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you will be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you for that because it does mean quite a bit. Hope you have a great rest of your work week and a good weekend as well. We'll see you back here on Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.